The following podcast is brought to you by the Village Zendo. For more information, visit villagezendo.org.
Good morning, everyone. I've had a lovely sit this morning. I've been sitting in front of the windows, and there's been a cool breeze blowing on my face, and it's been quite a relief after the late spring heat wave we had a few days ago. I've really been appreciating it. And I've also been appreciating seeing all your faces on my screen. I use an iPad for my Zoom meetings, and one of the disadvantages is that it only can hold so many squares at one time, so I have to swipe through to see you all. But it's wonderful to see you and to know that we're all sitting together. I thought today I would focus on a koan that came up for me recently. I was working on it with a student, and it's actually one I've never heard a Dharma talk on. It's a little bit on the cryptic side, but it's embedded in a mondo dialogue between a teacher and a student that I think is quite profound, and it was quite helpful to me as I reflected on it. So I thought I would share it with you and see what we can make of it together. And it involves Manjushri and Wu Cho. And Wu Cho was a monk, and of course Manjushri is the deity that in Buddhist iconography represents wisdom. And they had quite a relationship, these two, and in exploring this relationship, I think we explore our relationship to ourselves and all of reality. And this dialogue begins when Wu Chu is making a pilgrimage to Mount Tai, which is where, according to tradition, Manjushri sets up residence. And when Wu Chu was hiking in Mount Tai, Manjushri created a monastery for him so he would have a place to rest. And so right there, we have a question come up for us. Well, what is Manjushri's monastery? Where is it? Where will we find it? Where is the seat of wisdom? And how can we rest there? What is this wonderful monastery that's available to us at every moment? And how do we rest there? Then the story goes on. Manjushri asked Wu Cho, where do you come from? And Wu Cho said, from the south. Manjushri said, oh, what's the practice like down in the south? And Wu Cho said, monks in this decadent age have lost all discipline. Manjushri said, well, how many congregations are there? And Wu Cho said, some 300, some 500. And then things heat up because Wu Cho turns around and begins questioning Manjushri. And he asks maybe the key question, especially if we're going to rest ourselves in this wonderful monastery. He asks, what's the practice like hereabouts? And Manjushri says, ordinary people and sages dwell together. Snakes and dragons intermingle. Snakes are it's a symbol for deluded beings, dragons for enlightened beings. So ordinary folks and wise folks dwell together, the deluded and the enlightened, and practice in the same place, says Manjushri. Then Wu Cho says, well, how many are the congregations? And Manjushri says, in front, 3x3, in back, 3x3. So that's sufficiently cryptic for any koan. And in his commentary, Yuan Wu said, this is crazy talk. What's he mean? In front, 3x3, in back, 3x3. This place where ordinary people and sages practice together, where delusion and enlightenment occupy the same place in this monastery. In front, 3x3, in back, 3x3. To me, this phrase is a metaphor for the boundlessness of our lives, saying, you know, there's two or three congregations here, four or five congregations there. That limits it. But the Dharma is the biggest of all big tents. Manjushri's monastery is a boundless place. It's the boundless place we inhabit. If you are in Manjushri's monastery and you're aware of there being walls and a roof and a floor, then you're not in Manjushri's monastery. Any kind of boundary where some people are in and some people are out, where roses are in and poison ivy is out, where the wise are free to enter and the foolish never tread, it will never be Manjushri's monastery. There will never be a place to rest because we'll always be trying to be wise and not to be foolish. We'll always be rejecting the people who irritate us and who we think are wrong-headed and stupid. And we'll want to win the praise of the people we admire and who we think have some special connection to the truth that we don't have. How is it possible to rest there in a monastery like that? The monastery must be boundless. The congregation must be boundless, in front 3x3, in back 3x3. How big is that? How small is that? We can't say. But we do know, according to Manjushri, that it's 3x3, whether you're in front, leading the charge, whether you're an old bumbler bringing up the rear, whether you're one of the cagey folks who likes to be on the sides. It's all 3x3, 3x3, 3x3. And one thing we know about three is that it always equals three. No matter where you are in the congregation, it's 3 by 3. The place we're at right now is in that congregation. The place we're at right now is in that temple, and it's right here, right now, that we can find rest in the place that this icon of wisdom has so thoughtfully created for us. Then things keep going on between Manjushri and Wucho. So following this dialogue, they sit down to tea together, and Manjushri holds up a beautiful crystal tea bowl, absolutely flawless, absolutely transparent. And he asks Wucho, "Do they have this down south?" And Wucho goes, "No." And Manjushri goes, "Well, what do you use to drink tea out of?" This wonderful crystal tea bowl, this flawlessly transparent vessel, is the vessel of our lives. Sometimes it's called the clear mirror, many metaphors for it. But, you know, the basic point of it is when that tea bowl is filled with acrid, bitter tea, it's completely full of acrid, bitter tea, and there's no tea bowl to be seen. It's too flawless. It's too transparent. It's too much. Our own nature, our own clear, flawless nature, for us to be able to see it. And so we directly access the bitter tea that is being served to us at that moment without any obstruction whatsoever. And of course, we like it better when that tea bowl is filled with delightful, refreshing tea. And this tea bowl, too, is 3 by 3, 3 by 3. There's no obstruction to drink using that tea bowl to drink the delightful and refreshing tea. It holds both kinds of tea equally, both kinds of tea completely transparently. If you see the tea bowl, if you think it's something you can have or not have, you don't really have something with which to drink the tea that's being served to you at this moment. I don't know. I'm sure everyone is getting a different bowl of tea at this moment. Some enjoying it. Maybe some others not so much. The important thing is to drink the tea and not to obscure things by looking for the tea bowl that's going to make the tea something other than what it is. The tea bowl is always fully present, no matter what tea is being served. And the dialogue goes on. It's pretty long. So the next morning, Wucho prepares to take his leave. And Manjushri sends his servant boy to show him the way. And so as they're walking out, Wucho asked the boy, "You know, yesterday your master said in front 3 by 3 and back 3 by 3. Oh, well, how many is that? And the boy goes, Wu Cho. Wu Cho goes, yes. And the boy goes, how many is that? And Wu Cho goes, where is this temple? And the boy points, and Wu Cho looks. And at that moment, the temple and the boy vanish. And Wu Cho finds himself standing alone in an empty valley. And Manjushri isn't quite done with Wu Cho yet, because Wu Cho settles down in a more ordinary type of nearby temple and becomes the temple cook. And every once in a while, when he's cooking the rice and the steam is coming up from the rice pot, Manjushri's face appears in the steam. And Wu Cho takes the ladle and bops him on the head, and Manjushri disappears. He knows that if there's any Manjushri to be seen, it's not Manjushri. If there's any Manjushri to be seen, you're separate from Manjushri. And so to me, this koan is a koan of opening, the importance of opening, the importance of finding your rest in the boundless monastery where there are no walls, no roof, no floor, where there's nothing to be seen but all beings, the cats and the dogs, the sun, the moon, the flowers, the weeds. All beings, all are welcome in the boundless monastery of Manjushri. And at every moment, we can find our rest there. Now, sort of changing up the groove here, as the disc jockeys like to say, this notion of boundlessness comes up a lot in the teachings of another very great master, Master Chao Cho, also known as Joshu. And he has his own take on Manjushri's boundless monastery. A monk once asked him, what is Joshu? And he said, east gate, west gate, north gate, south gate. All the gates are open. If you feel separate from the gates, they're locked. You can't open them. You can try to pound on the locks all you want. Get enlightened, get wise, get compassionate. Try to be this way or that way. Try to seize upon some way of being that's going to get you credit with the world or with yourself. You can pound all you want, the locks won't open. But when you rest in Joshu, there never was a barrier in the first place, and the whole world is yours. Now, this sounds very grand indeed. But is it so grand? Is it beyond our normal experience? Another mondo of Joshu. A monk came to visit him and said, I've heard about the famous stone bridge of Joshu. And now all I'm seeing is a simple log bridge. The great stone bridge in that town, the town was called Chaocho, Joshu. That was what the town was famous for, this great stone bridge. So the monk says, I'm only seeing a simple log bridge, which I'm just seeing a shabby old monk. And Joshu says, well, you only see the log bridge. You don't see the stone bridge. The monk asks, what is the stone bridge? And Joshu says, it lets asses cross. It lets horses cross. You know, when we talk about crossing, we're kind of talking about prajna paramita, crossing to the other shore, crossing to the seat of enlightenment and wisdom, which we mistakenly think is on the other side of the river from where we are. What he's saying is that the simple log bridge of this shabby old monk is not different from the great stone bridge of prajna paramita. And Joshu really walked the walk. It wasn't just about spouting off. He lived his life as the simple log bridge. And we go, oh, how nice. A life of peace and simplicity and equanimity. Well, really? Joshu actually wrote a poem that tells us what his life was like, at least at the time he wrote the poem. It's called The 12 Hours of the Day. And gives us an idea of the simple log bridge that he was talking about. I'll just read to you the first 2 hours. Joshu writes, the cock crows the first hour of the day, aware of sadness, feeling down and out, yet getting up. There are neither underskirts nor undershirts, just something that looks a little like a robe. Underwear with the waist out, work pants and tatters, a head covered with 35 pounds of black grit. In such a way, wishing to practice and help people, who knows that, on the contrary, it is being a nitwit. He goes on. Sun level with the ground. The second hour of the day. A broken down temple in a deserted village. There's nothing worth saying about it. In the morning gruel, there's not a grain of rice. Idly facing the open window and its dirty cracks. Only the sparrows chattering, no one to be friends with. Sitting alone, now and then hearing fallen leaves hurry by. Who said that to leave home and be a monk is to cut off likes and dislikes? If I think about it, before I know it, there are tears moistening my hanky. So there you have quite a vivid depiction of the life of one of the most important teachers in the history of Zen. Apparently the Dharma wasn't a path that led to onward and upward and bigger and better. So what did it lead to? It led to, in my opinion, the realization that the simple log bridge and the great stone bridge are not two. That even in a life of considerable difficulty and pain, the moon of enlightenment is fully reflected at each moment, in each sigh, in each tear. In each moment, good, bad, or indifferent, it is a life lived in the boundless temple where dragons and snakes intermingle, where the wise and the deluded practice together, nothing left out. As Joshu says later in the poem, the clear moon in the front gate, to whom is it begrudged? That full moon is always shining in front of the temple of Manjushri. It's always shining in each moment of our practice with all beings, wise and foolish alike. I'll sort of conclude with one of Joshu's great mandos, which I think gives the feel of what his approach to life was like, even a life of difficulty and hardship. A monk asked Joshu, what is it when the mind neither is still nor goes on? Joshu said, it's alive, but that's just to deal with it intellectually. The monk said, how is it when you don't deal with it intellectually? Joshu bowed. So thank you, everyone. It was wonderful sitting with you today in Manjushri's temple.